Thank you, Kevin. It's good to see everyone today. We have a good number present. Thankful for this opportunity to bring some words to you. I didn't see anyone with tomatoes in their pockets, so maybe I'll be safe. I don't know if everyone does or not, but ask a question before we start. Do you like riddles? Here's an example of a riddle. Two coins add up to 30 cents. One of them is not a nickel. Any answers come to mind? Well, the answer may be it's a trick. It's why it's called a riddle. One isn't a nickel. The other one is. So a nickel and a quarter add up to 30 cents. Riddles are not unique to current age. And we're going to look at one to begin our lesson that was written thousands of years ago and comes to us from the Bible. It's in Judges chapter 14. This one is very interesting. And in verse 14 we read from Judges 14, out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. This riddle was posed to the Philistines by Samson. Samson was trying to win a bunch of changes of clothes, a bunch of garments, and if he lost, then he had to furnish a bunch of garments. We know what happened in verse 5 through 9 there. We see how this riddle came about. The wedding was going to be in a place called Timnah. And when they were on their way to Timnah, Samson and his parents, a lion approached Samson, and evidently his parents weren't there because they didn't know of it. He gave them later. We'll see that they weren't firsthand privy to it. This male lion came approaching, and Samson killed that lion with his bare hands. I've often wondered, if you had to kill a lion with your bare hands, how would you go about doing it? Of course, we know Samson was given the gift of immeasurable strength, and it was the secret to his strength was his hair, but we're not going to talk about Samson specifically in great depth today. His ability to come up with riddles or make good decisions or bad decisions, because we know he had his challenges like we all do. Verse 6 says that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, and Samson tore the lion as one might tear a young goat. I've never killed any goats, but I don't think that would be an easy task either. Of course, a kid goat is little compared to this lion that's coming at you, and I guess goats have bitten some people, but they're not going to be slashing at you while they're trying to do it. But this is how it was referred to us, and it's unimaginable to me how you would do this. A little while passed, and when they came back down to Timnah, Samson went out of his way and went to look at the lion. And the carcass of the lion was still there, and a group of bees had made a hive inside the carcass of the lion. And Samson scooped the honey out of it, and he ate it, and he gave it to his parents. Out of the eater came something to eat. Out of the strong came something sweet. The Philistines couldn't figure it out, and of course they got his bride to tell them, but that's not the outlook of our lesson today. Sorry, I forgot to hit my unmute on my mic here. The purpose of our lesson today is we're going to learn some of the lessons from lions and what we see about lions in the Bible. Lions and lionesses are mentioned in the Scriptures close to 150 times. God used the lion as something of example many times. Man calls lion the king of the jungle. You don't just find them in the jungle. They're in the deserts. They're in Africa in lots of regions. Some people call them king of the beasts. But God uses lions even to do such things as carry out punishment. In 2 Kings chapter 17, this is during the time of captivity, God has allowed the children of Israel who have ignored him, who have not been serving him faithfully, to be carried off. And the land of Canaan, which they were given, has been given to other people. But the people that come in aren't fearful of God. Verse 25 says, because they feared not the Lord, that the Lord did send in lions among them and slew some of them. These lions brought fear on people that evidently weren't fearful of much. In 1 Kings chapter 13, we see a prophet is sent by God to the king of Israel, Jeroboam. The prophet was told to deliver his message and then get out of there. He was not to drink water, to eat any food, don't even go home the same way. Well, a false prophet caught him. He started back. He didn't sit down and have a meal with him. He left. And a false prophet went and caught up with him and said, oh, I'm a prophet of God too, and I was told for you to come eat with me. So rather than finish what he had started out, he'd already done the hard part. All he had to do was go home. And it was in that action, just the last bits, where he chose to disobey the command that God had given him, and it ultimately led to his demise. He had the meal, he went with them, and God did speak to the false prophet while they were eating and told him, he said, you should have done what you were supposed to do. Well, they finished, and he saddled his donkey and left. God allowed a lion to come on him, and the lion killed the prophet. The false prophet even went to look for him and found the lion, the prophet's body, and the donkey still sitting there. The lion wasn't bothering the donkey, and the donkey wasn't running off. They were still standing there. The lion in that case brought punishment to the unfaithful prophet. Later in Daniel chapter 6, we read about a character by the name of Darius. And Darius was king of the Medo-Persians, kingdom that was given power over the children of Israel. And of course, they were using some of the people to serve them. We've heard of the people of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and also Daniel, that were children of Israel that were serving the king in this land. Daniel served faithfully, and he did so with all his might. He was a good advisor, and Darius actually considered him a friend. He liked Daniel. Some of the other advisors were very jealous of Daniel and coaxed him and found a way to convince King Darius to decree this law that no one was to pray to anyone except the king for such a period of time. And they knew Daniel prayed three times a day. He did it with his doors open, his windows open. Everyone knew Daniel was faithful to God. They convinced Darius to sign this law, and Darius was tricked. But part of their laws were that you can't undo a law. And the punishment for praying to anyone other than the king for a period of time there was to be thrown into the lion's den. Daniel still was faithful because he knew we ought to obey God rather than men. And he knew, in spite of the punishment, he chose to obey God. He was seen. They were lying in wait. They saw him. They brought him to the king. And the king realized how he'd been tricked into. And he knew he had to throw Daniel into the lion's den. They had a big stone to keep him in there. But even Darius said, your God can deliver you. They put Daniel in the lion's den, and when the next morning when they went and opened it, he didn't sleep all night. Darius, he felt guilty. He stayed up all night, and he ran, and they let him out. And Daniel said that God sent an angel of the Lord to close the mouths of the lions, and it was evident he hadn't been touched. The people who had convinced Darius to do this were thrown in there, not only them, but their wives, their families. And it said that they were killed by the lions. It says their bones were crushed before they even hit the bottom of the lion's den. God used those lions to punish those unfaithful people. David in 2 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 23 makes a comparison about lions. I learned something in more and corrected a misnomer that I had in my mind about David. We know that David, when he went to do battle with Goliath, Saul tried to give him his armor. And David used as justification, as proof that he wasn't scared to do this. He said, I've already killed a bear and a lion who were trying to take a lamb. We know that David killed Goliath with a rock in his sling, don't we? And for some reason in my mind, I still had that's how he did the lion and the bear also. But that's not right. 1 Samuel 17, verses 34 through 36, he had told Saul about that. Said he smote the lion, delivering a lamb from the mouth of the lion. Then when the lion attacked him, verse 35 says, David caught him by his beard, smote him, and slew him. I don't guess you would call that hand-to-hand combat because the lion didn't have any chance. But if you grab a lion by the beard and come out victorious, he was incredibly brave and courageous and skilled as a warrior, as he would, of course, show in front of the nation when he defeats Goliath. But David knew all about lions. He was up close and personal with them, wasn't he? And he compared King Saul and his son Jonathan, said that they were swift like the eagle and strong like the lion. He knew how fierce they were and compared Saul and Jonathan to them. Both the lessons of Samson and David show us how they survived with a lion. And I have to think that they did this largely by not reacting the way the lion expected them to. The lion's tactics are something that we all probably know a little bit about. When we think of the lion, what do we think of? We think of them roaring, don't we? And that's a big factor of how the lion is successful. The lion roars with such volume and ferocity that their cries, their screams, their outcries can often be heard as far as 5 miles away. When we were in trouble or it was time to leave somebody's place, Dad just whistled. He had a whistle. When we heard that whistle, it's time to leave. But he never whistled for us 5 miles away. That's amazing to me. And I'm sure that's one of the many reasons that God uses them as a tool for us to learn lessons from. I think we need to look at those examples of Samson and David facing those lions and take away that readiness. When the lion roars on unsuspecting prey for an instant, maybe a little longer, that prey is paralyzed. It's something they're not expecting. They're frozen in fear. I know some people in eastern New Mexico, the boy plowed all day, and you get further and further away from your vehicle. And he stopped. It was dark late at night, and you kill it, cool off your tractor, and you walk back to your vehicle. He was on his way back to his vehicle, and a mountain lion cried at him in the night. And he ran back to that tractor and slammed the door so hard he shattered the glass. He was so overwhelmed with fear. And I don't know how, I'm not criticizing him. I don't know how I would react to that thing in the darkness that's got to be so terrifying. He called his parents, and his parents told him, he said, we couldn't understand what he was saying. He was overcome. David and Samson weren't overcome. They had to be ready for anything, didn't they? I think that's what we need to take away from the examples of David and Samson. These lions didn't get them. They didn't overwhelm them. They didn't freeze in fear and do nothing. They reacted. They had to be ready. And they didn't become overwhelmed. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Tells us something that we need to apply here to our life. 1 Peter 5 and verse 8 tells us who it is that is our enemy. We're told to be sober and be vigilant because of him. 1 Peter 5, 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. That's what the devil does. He likes to devour people. He will never be satisfied. His appetite to be the ruin of mankind will never be filled or satisfied. In my job selling John Deere equipment, I've met some very interesting people. One of the people I've met married a girl from West Texas. Went off, made his fortune in advertising. And in that, he had the means and went on several. The last I knew, he had been on over a dozen safaris. The first time I met him, went out to his place, and there was an old boxcar there. He said, can I show you something before we look at this tractor? Sure. He opened the door, that wood-lined boxcar with the swinging door that swung out, and there was a water buffalo looking out. That 40-foot boxcar was full of exotic animals. He had two full-grown male stuffed lions. I have no idea what it cost him just to have those mounted, let alone brought back over here, the trip over there. And that's not the issue. I'm not trying to get down to that. Those male lions, the top of their back, standing on all 4 feet, the top of their back came up to the middle of my chest. They had scars all across their face from the fights they had gotten in. And he told a story. He said, we weren't hunting lion. Me and another hunter were up in a tree, in our tree blind, or tree stands. We were downwind. We were camoed out. And this, he'd been on multiple hunts. And he said there was a trail that came out right by these trees. They were waiting for a certain kind of animal that they could shoot. I think they were actually hunting with bow at this time. And he said, and we saw coming afar off on this trail a male lion. He said, and his shoulders were down. He was walking. His tail was down. He was not agitated. It took him a long time to come down this trail. He said, we didn't breathe. We didn't make a sound. He said, and this lion with his head down gets all the way to the foot of our trees and stops and looked up at us and went, rah. And said he dropped his head and he went walking on off. He wasn't scared in the least of mankind. That is where one thing differs for how we can battle the devil as a roaring lion versus the hunters. You know what we're told we have to do to make the devil flee from us? Resist him. Resist him. Tell him no. Not going to do it. And he will flee from us. I love old Western movies. You ever watch the Magnificent Seven, Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen? The first time the villagers fight and they frighten the banditos away and they run off. The guys go, he was running from us. We made him run away. And they had new strength and energy to carry on their fight. That's what we're told we have to do to make the devil run away from us. Resist him. Resist him. Another thing that the devil has, though, is an awareness of us. We don't need to be naive and think that we are not on the radar, that Satan doesn't know who we are. Job is a good example of this, the story of Job. In Job chapter 1, we see God asks Job, what have you been doing? Or asks Satan, what have you been doing? And Job says, going to and fro about the earth. And God bragged on Job. Wouldn't that be a magnificent thing if God could brag on you? He bragged on Job. He says, have you considered my servant Job? And Job knew all, Satan knew all about Job. You blessed him. He's rich. He's got lots of herds. He's got big family. The only reason he's faithful to you is because you give him lots of stuff. He knew all about Job. He didn't say, Job who? He knew him, didn't he? Because he goes to and fro about the earth. As a roaring lion, what's he doing? Why does he go to and fro? Seeking whom he may devour. That's us. He's seeing if we're vulnerable. He's learning our patterns. If there's a time of the day, a time of the week that we're at our most vulnerable, guess when? Satan is liable to roar at you and see if you paralyze, if you freeze, or if you've got your armor on, your weapons, and you're ready. What if Satan studied and wanted us? He does. He does study us. He does want us. Paul was one of the Sanhedrin councils. He was basically their top marshal. He was sent out with warrants to get all the Christians and bring them back, bound or not bound. And when he became a Christian, you ever thought about how humiliated, how infuriated the Sanhedrin was at Paul for crossing over to the other side? Think about how Satan would like a trophy like that. To get a faithful Christian who had led, who just got tired, who just wanted to not do as much. Think of what a trophy Job would have been. You think Job wouldn't have been put up before the whole religious world? You think he wouldn't have been stuffed in on the wall, so to speak? Absolutely. We've got to be ready. We've got to know our weapons. What weapons do we use to fight the devil? Well, we've talked about one, just resisting him. Trevor mentioned a good verse from Hebrews chapter 12, the Word of God. Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, beginning in verse 10. Let's look at that. Let's look at what weapons we are to use. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 10. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the full armor of God, so that we will be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the full armor of God, so that we will be able to resist in the evil day. And having done everything, to stand firm. Stand firm, therefore, having girded your loins with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. In addition to all, taking up the shield of faith, with which you will be able to extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one, and take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. Those are our weapons. Do you remember why David didn't want Saul's weapons? Saul was not a small man. Do you remember when the prophet went to see Jesse, to see who the next king was going to be, and the biggest, the stoutest ones came? Oh, he thought, this has got to be the one, and it wasn't the one, it wasn't the one, it wasn't the one. All the biggest, the stoutest didn't get picked. It was the little shepherd that was away in the field. He said, don't you have any more sons? Well, we got one that's out with the flocks. That was the one. Saul was huge. He was head and shoulders above everyone else. His armor wouldn't fit David. But besides that, David hadn't proved those weapons. You ever shoot someone else's gun if you shoot guns or bow and arrow? There's just something different about it, is it? Someone can take something and be proficient, and it may be just a little different to you. Maybe your arms fit a little different. Maybe it's holding it up against your shoulder a little different. David didn't want Saul's weapons because he hadn't proven them. So what does our armor look like? What do our weapons look like? Are they pristine and mint and unscratched and untarnished and shiny because they're not broken in? Teddy Roosevelt was an avid hunter and soldier before that. He was familiar with weapons. Teddy Roosevelt, what's the most famous quote of Teddy Roosevelt? I would venture to say it's speak softly and carry a big stick. I've heard an interesting one that I think applies to weapons, but it doesn't mention weapons specifically. Bibles that are falling apart come from people who aren't. If you wear your Bible out, learning it, handling it, going through it, starts to show some wear, doesn't it? One of my biggest trophies I've got is one of my mom's Bibles. We can't be ready to go into battle if we're unfamiliar and we haven't tried and tested and proved our weapons. We need to think about that. We need to be expecting the devil to attack us, and then he won't. And then he won't. He will flee from us if we resist him. We can't be so off guard that we freeze if we hear the roar of the lion. Another enemy that was warned about in Acts chapter 20 doesn't come from outside, but Christians were warned to be ready for it. The writer of Acts says there in verse 31 that he warned them about it 3 years. He did so day and night in tears. The first century church was going to have people from inside try to attack it and tear it down. And they warned them about him from their own number. Verse 29 says that there would arise from their own number those that would not spare the flock, but would intentionally try to draw disciples after them. We have to keep our weapons and our armor ready for attacks everywhere, don't we? We're supposed to check on one another. We're supposed to care for one another. We're supposed to encourage, help, check on one another. Look at 1 Thessalonians with me.
First Thessalonians. Chapter 5, and verse 11 says, "Therefore encourage one another and build one another up, just as you also are doing." Proverbs 27 and 17 tells us that iron sharpens iron. We're supposed to help sharpen each other so that we're ready, and our weapons are always at hand, aren't we? One reason that lions are so dangerous is they're smart. They're incredibly smart. When being tracked by humans and hunted, a lion will often get far enough ahead or far enough, deep enough in cover that it can slip away to the side. Hunters tracking lions have found, we're going in circles. Here's our tracks. We have gone around and we are right back where we started. And they often find lion tracks on top of their tracks. The hunter is often the hunted when you're hunting lions. They're incredibly smart and dangerous. When Jesus went into the wilderness in Matthew chapter 4, I love this language. It says in verse 2, when he had fasted 40 days and nights, he was afterward hungered. Friends, if I had been fasted 40 days and nights, I wouldn't be hungry after it. I would have probably been hungry about the first hour and a half, 2 hours of it. Jesus had incredible discipline. If I miss lunch, I typically tell someone about it. I think I've made that statement up here at the pulpit before. I like food. Satan waited until that 40 days was over. Jesus was by himself in the wilderness. Don't you think Satan wanted to jump on that opportunity as soon as he saw it? He waited. He waited for his opportunity. He waited for Jesus to get hungrier and hungrier. What happens when we get hungry? We may be hungry right now. Anybody else want me to talk about food just a minute before 12 here? We lose our focus, don't we? We start thinking about something else other than what we're supposed to. That, to me, has got to be the hardest thing about fasting, the whole concept of it. But you know, if I'm busy at work and I'm going from one task to the next and someone is waiting on me, I can work through lunch. Grady and Benson will attest to this, that sometimes at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, if they're helping me, they say, are we going to eat? I can get distracted. We all can. Those two lions in that boxcar with all those scars made a lion very real to me. I was up close and personal, and I was glad they were stuffed. So I didn't have weapons with me. Sure, I might have had a pocket knife. Wait. Let me get my pocket knife. What good's a pocket knife going to do against a lion? Samson did it with his bare hands. I don't know what weapon, if David had a weapon, when he grabbed that lion by the beard and smote and slew him. It's not a coincidence, it's not an accident that God chose to tell us about lions, that God chose to call the devil a lion, a roaring lion who walks about seeking whom he may devour. It's not a coincidence. It's on purpose. It's a very vivid and real thing that we can picture. And that's exactly what we're doing to do. We need to picture the devil as being someone real, someone who is circling around behind us somewhere, crossing our tracks, waiting until he roars at us to see if we'll freeze. We need to be familiar with the Word of God. That needs to be our sword for all our battles, doesn't it? That needs to be something that we're familiar with, that feels right in our hand because I'm used to it. He is our adversary. We need to prepare for seeing him in battle, for making him flee from us, and trust that he will, that he's willing to wait however long it takes. Let's not let the devil make trophies out of us that gets hung on the wall. There's nothing he would like more than to have lots of Christians to lock away in torment for eternity. Let's be ready, let's be brave when he roars, and he will. If you're subject to the invitation to become a Christian, you need to. We're told what we must do. You need to be baptized, become a child of God, and get ready for our battles to get easier, because we're all here to help each other, aren't we? Iron sharpens iron, makes it sharper. If you're subject to the invitation or need prayers of the congregation, please come as we stand and sing.